everyone. This is the New Rules Podcast, and I'm your host, Dimitri Symes Jr. Today, we're going to look at the growing risk of a NATO/French intervention in Ukraine. And to help us unpack this topic, I'm very pleased to welcome a longtime friend of the program, Scott Ritter. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So over the past few weeks, French President Emmanuel Macron has repeatedly hinted at sending NATO troops to Ukraine. And earlier this week, Russian intelligence said that they have information that the French are planning to send a 2,000 troop contingent to Ukraine. What do you make of this whole situation?
Well, first of all, I think we need to break it down into a political, you know, side of the equation and then a military side of the equation. Politically, Emmanuel Macron feels that he has been abandoned by the United States and that, the United States had pressured France, Germany, NATO to lean forward aggressively on the issue of supporting Ukraine. And if you recall, going back in time, prior to the special military operation, Emmanuel Macron was somebody who said that he didn't want Europe to be caught, to become the battleground between, you know, a struggle between two superpowers, and that he felt that it was important for Europe to have a, its own security arrangements independent from the United States so they wouldn't be dragged into a situation. So there was a time, once upon a time, when Emmanuel Macron was capable of reasoned, cogent thought. But he and the rest of Europe succumbed to the pressures of the United States to lean forward aggressively against Russia and supporting Ukraine, and never once thought that maybe the United States, I just don't know why the French, the Germans, NATO never reflected on the reality of the United States when it comes to commitments. Even these carved in stone commitments that Joe Biden is fond of speaking of. August 2021, the United States withdrew from Afghanistan in a very precipitous fashion, abandoning our NATO allies after we encouraged them to, you know, invest heavily into the Afghanistan project. And now we've encouraged them to invest heavily into the Ukraine project. The reality is America's not capable of sustaining an effort of this nature. It gets caught up in domestic political, infighting between Republicans and Democrats. Right now we have $64 billion aid package that's seemingly trapped permanently in Congress. And Macron is suddenly isolated, alone. And instead of acknowledging failure, this is an embarrassing moment for Europe, an embarrassing moment for France. They can't admit that they really are incapable of going alone. So he is doubling down on supporting Ukraine. And he is now we go into the military side. You know, politically, he says, if the United States isn't going to be the leader, France will be the leader. But lead with what? When we take a look at French military capability. Right now, the French have a reinforced battalion-sized force in Romania, part of a NATO program, Operation Eagle. It's a NATO brigade-sized element, early brigade headquarters that's supposed to be part of a NATO division, none of which exists. They exist on paper. This battalion's there. The French were planning on reinforcing this battalion to a brigade-sized element, about 2,000 men, next year. What Macron is doing right now is accelerating the deployment of this brigade, creating the conditions to put these forces into Romania earlier and then to project them into Ukraine. But that's all he can do. I mean, there's talk, I've heard this insane talk coming from, the commander of the French forces that they're going to put 20,000 troops in now, and then eventually they can do 60,000, maybe up to 120,000. France can't logistically support that. It's impossible for France to support that. This is meaningless talk. It's gibberish on their part. They don't have troops capable of being assembled and deployed in the numbers necessary. The best France could do is probably around a 12,000 man contingent, but it would logistically they couldn't sustain it. They aren't prepared for expeditionary warfare on that scope and scale. And that's just the question of getting troops there. How do you sustain them with ammunition, fuel, et cetera? And then we can even just get into the whole, architecture of warfare. The French system of war that they're doing now is based upon, the notion of perfect communications, seamless data transfer. They've created this whole architecture of, their tanks are linked to their tanks are linked to everything. They have computers and everybody talks to each other. And that all goes through a satellite that I would imagine the Russians know about this satellite, and that the satellite wouldn't exist long after Russia was, engaged in meaningful combat with the French, which means all the French troops on the ground go dumb. They can't talk to one another, and it just makes it that much easier to kill them. This is suicide on the part of France, literal suicide. But here's the worst part. Let's say they send the 2,000 troops in. I can't imagine a scenario where Russia would allow this to happen. And I'll tell you why. 2,000 troops is nothing. It doesn't change the equation. But if Russia, there's that old Middle Eastern, story, if you let the camel's nose under the tent, next thing you know, the whole camel's in the tent. And these 2,000 troops is the equivalent of, the NATO equivalent of the camel's nose. And if Russia allows these 2,000 troops to go in unmolested, uncontested, Poland will immediately be sending troops in, because they'll say, well, the French president is, Russia doesn't care. So then Poland will send a 2,000-man contingent. Then the Baltics will start sending in reinforced company-sized. Next thing you know, you have a 10,000-person non-NATO contingent, but it really is NATO. It's NATO troops. And then they're going to reinforce it to 20,000. They'll be in western Ukraine along the Belarusian border. And suddenly you're going to see NATO getting together and instantly transfer this into an Article 4 emergency deployment under NATO with, and then they're going to project air power in to provide the cover, because you can't have the troops in there up. And now Russia's dealing with a NATO, deployment into Ukraine, which Russia allowed. And this is what will happen. So Russia can't let that happen. So Russia will, I believe, take it out early, take it out hard. So now you have 2,000 French troops in there. The Russians hit them. France now is looking at 800 dead, wounded, massive defeat. So they're going to project air power in to try and protect these troops. They're going to send in their Rafale fighters. They're going to send in air defense. The Russians will take that out. Now the French are hurting. They're going to be screaming for help. And so where's that help going to come from? France is going to deploy more air power, but they can't deploy them out of the Ukrainian air bases they were hoping to operate on, because those have been destroyed. So now they're going to project air power out of Romanian air bases, which makes Romania a target. Or they cut a deal with Moldova and they operate out of Moldova. But Moldova is not a NATO country, has no Article 5 protection. So now Moldova gets hit by the Russians, because the Russians aren't going to let you project air power into the Ukrainian theater of operations for free. There's no free ride. So now Russia is now attacking bases outside of Ukraine. And then this is going to escalate. NATO will get involved. And at some point in time, NATO will have to send a retaliatory strike against the Russian forces that are attacking these non-Ukrainian targets. That's a power projection into Russia that could reach the point of a strategic threat, especially if they start attacking Ingalls Air Base, they start attacking critical Russian command and control that has dual purpose, affects conventional military operations, but strategic nuclear deterrence. And now you've just triggered Russia's response mechanism for release of nuclear weapons. I don't think Russia's bluffing. When Russia says we have a nuclear doctrine, Vladimir Putin just told the whole world, nuclear weapons exist to be used. Nuclear weapons exist to be used. So if now NATO, knowing what Russia's nuclear doctrine is, triggers it, you're going to lose European cities. That's a guarantee. Again, I don't speak on behalf of Russia. I'm just telling you from a military analyst standpoint, when you go down the checklist, it's like, I don't know how the airplane started. Well, did you open up the checklist? Yes. And did you go down the checklist A, B, C, D? And did you do everything? Yeah. And when you got the part that said ignition and you hit it and the airplane started? Yeah. And you're surprised the airplane started. I don't know how the nuclear war started. Well, did you open up the playbook and go down every checklist? And when you get to the part that says trigger Russia's nuclear response, did you do something? Yes. Oh, so suddenly you lost Brussels, London, Paris, Berlin. They're gone. And then Russia's going to sit back with its strategic nuclear forces on full alert, looking at America going, what are you going to do now, America? You allowed this to happen. You allowed NATO to trigger us. You played stupid games, and now you got stupid results, and we're daring you. Yes, you can't pick up the phone and call London. Oh, you can't, because London doesn't exist. Try and call NATO headquarters. You can't. It doesn't exist. Call Macron. You can't call Macron either. He's dead, because it doesn't exist. Schultz is dead, too. So, Biden, what are you going to do? You're going to launch a nuclear retaliation? Because we already told you, we don't care anymore. We already told you, you triggered it. So if you want this, let's do it. And is America really going to sacrifice everything, commit suicide for the stupidity of NATO? That's a question we don't know the answer to. But one of the possible answers is, no, we're not going to. And so now we come back to Macron. Certainly there's intelligent life around Macron. Somebody that can say just what I said. Because everything I just said is fact-based. None of it's fantasy, none of it's fiction. It's all derived from stated policy, stated reality. So why isn't somebody telling Macron, you're literally committing personal suicide, national suicide, suicide for Europe? And here's the other thing. Why isn't somebody telling this to Biden, saying, you better get on the phone right now to Macron and say, do not even think about sending one French soldier. We will abandon you like you've never been abandoned. You think you're abandoned now? Watch how quick we abandon you. I will withdraw a U.S. ambassador from Paris. I will cut off all talk with you. I will tell the Russians, I will paint the target on your back and guide the Russians in to kill you, because I'm not going to let you go down the path to sacrifice everything that I've been working for in America. This isn't about Russian aggression against NATO. This is about you and your arrogant little pride moment trying to be something you're not. France is not a superpower. France is not a world power. France is a medium-sized European power. You know, France is the equivalent of a overfed chihuahua. And you don't want to get in the ring with the really beefed up Rottweilers, especially when they've been trained to eat overfed chihuahuas their entire life.
That was a really brutal takedown, Scott. Let me try and play devil's advocate for Macron, because what it seems to me that his assumption is basically this, that he's going to send in a small number of French troops to basically serve as tripwire. And the Russians are going to look at it and say, well, World War III is not worth over this. Have a bunch of French special agents, special forces, you know, stationed somewhere near Lvov or near the border with Belarus. But the cumulative effect is that this would allow the Ukrainians to free up some of their troops and throw it over to the hot points. What's wrong with this logic? Why don't you see there being any sort of military legitimacy to that kind of strategy?
Well, first of all, Zelensky and Zelensky and Sersky and the rest of them are, you know, talking about, you know, an immediate need to mobilize 200,000 men, 500,000 men. So you're telling me that the French are going to send in 2,000 men, and how many Ukrainians is that going to release? I mean, I know the French think they're really good. And so one Frenchman's worth, what, 100 Ukrainians? So, or, you know, 1,000 Ukrainians. So you send in 2,000 Frenchmen, and that frees up 200,000 Ukrainians that don't exist, by the way. It's not as though there's 200,000 combat-hardened Ukrainian forces, well-equipped, well-trained, waiting to be sent in. They just need the French to come to relieve their positions along the Belarusian border. 2,000 Frenchmen is the equivalent of 2,000 Ukrainian troops. So you it's plug in, plug out. So you take 2,000 guys, plug it in, 2,000 troops. That's 2 days casualties in this current conflict. 2 days. So France just bought what, Ukraine? 2 days? And then what? And then what? You got to send in more. And that's, again, camel nose under the tent, camel comes in, boom. And again, I can't speak for the Russians, but I would imagine that Vladimir Putin is surrounded by guys who are telling them just what I said. The camel's nose cannot be allowed anywhere near the tent. That camel has to be slapped away and kept far away, because otherwise this trajectory on to win becomes complicated. We don't want to allow this to become complicated. We have struggled very hard to get to the point now where strategic victory is in our grasp. You know, we will achieve the demilitarization. We will achieve the denazification. We're there. We've overcome all these obstacles. We've positioned the power politically. You've been given a mandate. We're ready to finish this job. Don't let the camel in the tent. And so I just don't foresee a scenario where, you know, this whole thing is predicated on the notion of Russia's bluffing. You hear this out of the Baltics. I mean, the Estonian president or prime minister is, you know, the Russians keep threatening nuclear war, and we have to show them that we're not afraid. Otherwise, the Russians have intimidated us. Well, let me give a professional hint to everybody listening. When anybody mentions nuclear war, be afraid, be very afraid, because it's not a game. It's not a game. And if you're allowing yourself to do things that puts the potential of nuclear war on the table, you have to ask, well, what is what I'm doing life-defining? I'll tell you this. If the Russians today said, we're going to come to America with 500,000 troops and we're going to take over your country, I'd say, now that's worth America saying, no, we will use nuclear weapons against you. Okay, you know, no, we're not going to let the Russians come in the United States and take over America and all that stuff. We'll use nuclear weapons. If Russia said, we're going to use nuclear weapons against you unless you do this, we'd say, well, if you use them against us, we'll take you out. That's why we have a nuclear deterrent force. The weapons exist to achieve certain, you know, limitations on behavior. But to allow NATO to expand in violation of all agreements given to Russia, allow that expansion to be used to put Russia in a strategically disadvantaged position, to empower Ukrainian nationalists to commit cultural genocide against ethnic Russians in Ukraine, and then scream when the Russians respond in a decisive fashion to defeat your project, your anti-Russian project. That's not worth committing suicide over. That's not worth using nuclear weapons. And again, what the United States is doing through its silence is empowering these, I don't mean to be too derogatory, but you know, these overstuffed fat chihuahuas who are sitting there barking, thinking that they're the big dogs. They're not. That's one of the dangers of NATO expansion, the way it was done, is that it allows nations like Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, Czech, the Czech Republic, and others to think that because they were invited at the table of NATO, that they're the equivalent of the biggest dog sitting around. There's really only one big dog in NATO today, and that's the United States. Everybody else is diminished. I mean, the British are a joke, put their entire army into a soccer stadium, and you have 20,000 empty seats. You know, think about that. You can generate more manpower in a popular soccer match between two top-level Russian teams than the British can generate with their entire military. The French military is a joke, a literal joke. The German military is incapable of meaningful combat operations. The only military that has any muscle is America, but we've atrophied over the years. We're not we're not the bodybuilders we once thought we were. You know, we're sort of overweight, middle-aged men who haven't been to the gym in a while. And everybody's acting as if this is back to 1988 when NATO was something, when we had meaningful forces in NATO. We don't. And the Russians, you know, I think history is going to show that the Ukrainian gambit by NATO and the United States empowered Russia to a degree we never thought would happen. Russia's defense industry is up and running, very efficient, very responsive to the needs of the Russian military. You know, we allowed Russia to fix mobilization because it was broke. When they did the 300,000, partial mobilization, it didn't work the way it should have been. There was a lot of rust, a lot of calcification. But what we allowed Russia to do is shake that off, clean it up, oil the joints, make it work. And now you see the Russian military talking about a further expansion. And this is going to be relatively seamless because Russia's done it. They fix it. They identified the problems. They have a defense industry ready to supply these. They have training programs ready to give the whatever troops they mobilize, they create relevant modern training based upon the realities of modern day war. Whereas we see, by the way, NATO trains the Ukrainian forces, NATO's trapped in the past. The best NATO troops aren't getting anywhere near the equivalent training in terms of the real realities of war. We've allowed Russia to become the best conventional military in the world. And now France wants to send 2,000 troops into Ukraine and play this game. I mean, that's like me sending, I mean, I'll use a soccer metaphor. I guess that's football in European terms. But that's like taking a 15-year-old soccer club that just got together to play a fun summer league and say, no, we're going to put you into the FIFA championships. No, they can get on the field, but that's all they can do. They won't even, it won't be close. France sends troops to Ukraine. The French military is just not that good. They're not that capable. They don't have meaningful combat power, and they'll just die.
I guess, though, France, if they were to decide on this adventure, they probably wouldn't go at it alone, because we see that in addition to Macron floating this possibility, we see the Poles increasingly coming around to it, the Czech Republic, and as you mentioned, the military juggernaut known as the Baltic states. What about, let's assume that France is able to assemble a coalition of these Central Eastern NATO countries. Would that be able to be more impactful? Would that be a serious potential threat?
No. Again, all it does is provide more meat for the meat grinder. First of all, NATO is incapable of sustained high-intensity combat today. The Poles, what would they send in? I mean, best case, the Poles could probably assemble, because we're not talking about defensive warfare. We're not talking about the warfare that Poland has been preparing for. Remember, the Poles right now train to take their military out of barracks into a preordained piece of territory and practice defending against a Russian attack. All right, that's their mindset. Russia attacks, Poland defends, America reinforces, and then at some point in time, there's the theoretical counterattack and then the end of exercise. That's it. What the Poles are talking about now is creating an expeditionary force. It's not a defensive force. It's an offensive force that will now be projected outside of Poland. We have just complicated the logistical support and sustainability of whatever the Poles are thinking. And if you don't practice this, if you don't train for it, it won't succeed. If you don't do logistics right, you will lose every military operation you get involved in. And the Poles are now talking about, it's not simply a general going, we've got 500 tanks, and draws a nice big arrow showing how we move the tanks into Ukraine, and then they draw a line there and we establish a position here. Well, that looks really cool. How are you getting the tanks there? We're going to assemble the heavy equipment transport vehicles. How many of those you got? Not enough. Okay. Can the roads handle that? Did you do a line of communications assessment? What about that bridge that you have to go over here? What happens when the Russians drop the bridge? Do we have the pontoon capability to create a different thing? And then that bottleneck, you see, because now we got, you're not falling in on equipment that's already there. You got all your fuel, all your is in trucks, and they're now lined up on a road with a blown out bridge, and they get blown up. Do you have the reserve capacity? Because you're going to lose all those. Do you have sufficient, you know, stockpiles ready to move up to replace? Because that's what war is. War is about anticipating massive loss and to be able to replace it. When your brigade, the lead brigade, engages and you start taking 30, 40, 50% casualties, do you have follow-on forces capable of doing a passage of lines to sustain the operation? Have you practiced a passage of lines under combat conditions? Passage of lines is when you have one unit out there engaged and then you are going to pass forces through it to sustain their mission. One of the more complicated things to do, and if you don't do it right, you end up what's known as a cluster on the battlefield where troops aren't moving, road jams, hit with artillery, they all die. The Poles will defeat themselves going into Ukraine. Russia won't have to do anything. And the Poles, let me give you an example of this. The Iraqis invaded Kuwait in August of 1990, and if you study that, yes, they had great success. One, because the Kuwaitis didn't really have a military force capable of meaningful resistance. But by the time the Iraqis got to the Saudi border, everybody's saying, well, they're going to, you know, again, the big arrow guys, they're just drawing arrows. We're going to draw a big arrow here, and they're going to go straight down the eastern Saudi oil fields and take them over. But the reality-based guys are going, they pretty much defeated themselves because they've run out of their logistics. The troops are in the front. They're hungry. They don't have fuel. They don't have enough ammunition for sustained combat. Just simply by advancing into Kuwait, the Iraqis defeated themselves. That's the reality. You know, then they had to dig in and the rest is history. But my point is, the Poles, if they try to project power into Ukraine, will defeat themselves. France, by trying to project power into Ukraine, will defeat themselves. NATO, by trying to project power, will defeat themselves, because it's all about the logistics. And NATO has not been playing the large-scale expeditionary game in a high-intensity conflict. Look how complicated it was for NATO to go to Afghanistan. It required Russia to open up its territory to get the logistics flowing in. It required Pakistan to open up two massive, you know, directions of logistics to come in to sustain this. And the numbers of troops there aren't what we're talking about here. And here we're talking about heavy tanks. We're talking about aircraft. We're talking about everything. NATO hasn't practice this. They haven't trained for it. They're not ready for this. NATO will defeat itself by going into Ukraine. That's the reality. The Poles, the Baltics, the Czech, they're smoking dope. I just want to ask them basic question. What is your on-hand stockpile of 155 millimeter ammunition? And the answer is, we don't have any. And so now you're going to take this force into Ukraine, and you're going to engage a Russian force that is built around the notion of massive artillery firepower as part of their concept of operations. So they're going to hit you with everything. What do you got? Nothing. So it's over. The stupidity of what people are talking about astounds me.
And my final question is this. You said that U.S. silence on this is dangerous for the United States itself. I want to ask you, when we see Macron issue these threats, when we see Poland, the Baltic states, I think a lot of people are asking, are they going rogue? Or do you think that they're making these sort of threats in some sort of coordination with Biden, that Biden is trying to pass the buck onto the European powers to continue this proxy war in Ukraine because he realizes that he no longer has the sort of domestic mandate to continue doing it via U.S. resources?
I think they've gone rogue, and I'll tell you why. If the United States was going to back this large coordinated effort, the Poles recently asked the United States to send more troops into Poland. Why? because they recognize that the force level that the United States currently has in Poland is a tripwire force. It's not a force capable of meaningful combat against a Russian-style enemy. And the Poles don't want to do the power projection into Ukraine thing unless they have a meaningful American, you know, military force on their soil backing them up. And so the Poles said, hey, could you send more troops? And Biden went, no, we're not doing that. And so the Poles understand now that remember, they have very limited capability. If they send their best, because in order to project power, you have to take your best trained troops who have the best ability to sustain themselves. They send them into Ukraine and they get slaughtered, and they will. Now they don't have anything. And, if, you know, now their fear is if the Russians counterattack. And again, what did Vladimir Putin say? We'll never attack Poland unless Poland attacks us first. And so now the Poles are going to project power into Ukraine. That's attacking Russia. Russia's an attack on Ukraine's attack against us. And now Russia countered, and the Poles have nothing. And they're looking to America saying, where are you? And America's going, we didn't want this. And 60,000 American troops, 100,000 if you bring in the logistics, isn't enough to stop the Russians if they make a move on Poland. And so Biden doesn't want this. Look, the Pentagon has run the numbers. And we can't fight a sustained conventional military conflict with Russia right now. Maybe in the future we could. Maybe if we mobilized, if we rebuilt some of the infrastructure we had in the 1980s, if instead of, you know, a couple brigades of troops, we had divisions and corps like we used to have, 300,000 troops capable of being reinforced by 200,000 more troops, maybe then we could say we can do this. But right now we don't have it, and we know we don't have it, which means if we get involved with Russia in a serious conventional conflict, it's going nuclear. Now we come back to what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. And Russia's ready for this. I mean, the one thing I've learned about studying Russia is that very rarely have I seen, almost never in modern times, Russia do a knee-jerk reaction. Just a, we get involved and they go, now how do we get out of this? The Russians... There's that old saying that they're, slow to harness, quick to ride. It takes the Russians a while to do something because they have to plan everything and get the capabilities put together before they commit to the action. And when they commit to the action, they know what they want to accomplish. And they also have thought about plan B, plan C, plan D. They're not perfect. And in many ways, this big plotting bureaucracy, creates opportunities for people who are more agile in terms of planning and stuff. But, you know, the Russians have a system. And when it's slow to harness, quick to ride. Right now, NATO's getting through their actions, the Russians are harnessing themselves up. And then they're going to start riding. And then they're going to keep going. And the end of the ride is nuclear war. It's automatic. Anybody who thinks, and maybe history will prove me wrong. To be frank, I hope history proves me wrong because I don't want a nuclear war. But I don't think the Russians are bluffing. I don't think the Russians bluff. I think the Russians have been very clear about what the consequences of actions are. And the Russians are ready for this. They've thought about this. They've gone through the exercises. Has Macron really thought about it? I loved it when the Russian senator, I think, was talking to the French media recently. I think his name was Tolstoy or something.
Pyotr Tolstoy.
Yeah. And... and the French journalist, but France has 200 nuclear weapons. And the Russians are like, I don't care. We got 6,000. You're 200. When we say we're going to nuclear war, guys, it means we accept that we're going to get hit. We accept that we may die. Vladimir Putin said we'll go to heaven as martyrs. The Russians have already factored this into their thinking. They're ready. And the French are like, but we have 200 nuclear weapons. No, you don't. You think you do, but you don't, because it doesn't matter unless you're ready to use them right now. Right now. I mean, if Macron came up and said, when I send in the 2,000 troops, they are backed by 200 French nuclear weapons that are on strategic alert right now. And if Russia attacks those troops, we will immediately retaliate with nuclear weapons against Russia. Make that statement. If you're going to say you have nuclear weapons, make that statement. Because then Russia could say, thank you, you made this very easy. Goodbye Paris, goodbye Bordeaux, goodbye Marseille, and kill all of them. France doesn't have 200 nuclear because France is not ready to use 200 nuclear weapons. It's a bluff. The French are bluffing.
And on that optimistic note, I want to thank all of our audience members for tuning in. If you want to go to heaven as a martyr in the upcoming nuclear war, make sure to like this video, subscribe to us on X and on Rumble, and send this video around because it offers an important message. and people need to be aware of it. Thank you all for tuning in. Till next time.